Welcome to the HCI family of podcasts. We're your source for personal, professional, and organizational growth and development. We share our own original research, explore industry trends, and interview executives and thought leaders from across the globe. Join us for practitioner-oriented content around all things leadership, HR, talent management, organizational development, and change management. Maximize your personal and organizational potential with the HCI family of podcasts. Carrie Jacobs-Crevetto, welcome to the conversation today.
Thank you so much, John. It's good to be here.
It is a pleasure to be with you. You're joining us from the Bay Area. I'm south of Salt Lake City in Utah. And today we're going to be talking about a really interesting topic in my mind, soul retrieval at work. This is, in my mind, connected to some of the things we've talked about previously on the podcast in relation to mindfulness and self-reflective practices and being your whole self at work. But frankly, I'm not exactly sure where this is going to go. And so I'm really excited to explore this with Carrie today. As we get started, I wanted to share Carrie's bio with everybody. Carrie Jacobs-Crevetto is an executive coach and advisor specializing in leadership development. After an advertising career working with Levi's, P&G, and Lexus, and work with startups like Sunrun and ModCloth, she pivoted towards work towards personal growth. She's certified by UC Berkeley and coach at Stanford. Now, Carrie, anything else you would like to highlight by way of your background or personal context before we dive on in?
Well, I think it'll probably become apparent as we talk.
Okay, great. Well, why don't we start then with just some framing? What in your from your point of view and from your practice, is this soul retrieval work all about?
So, well, you started off saying something that caught my energy right away, which is whole self, just like the concept of bringing our whole self to work. And I think the first starting point is for us to ask ourselves, how much do we really, truly know ourselves in today's world? You know, things are moving so quickly. And most of the time, we're operating from a pretty decentralized state of self, not a whole self. So even the idea, I think people think of, okay, when I am bringing my whole self, that means I can just sort of do or say or be whatever I want. And that's bringing my whole self. But actually, it's quite a different concept, which is first kind of having a depth of understanding of why we operate the way we do and what prompts us to operate the way we do. That's sort of step one. And then step two is then understanding how we bring that in full into the workplace so we don't feel like we're being unseen or we're not actually being fully expressed at work.
Yeah, I really like that. And like you said, that first step, so important. And I think most people think, yeah, this idea of bringing your whole self to work, that sounds great. I think most people want to feel comfortable being who they are at work and not trying to put on a mask and like be this other person that everyone expects them to be. I think people kind of intrinsically get the notion, but it's really hard to bring your whole self to work in an authentic way if you don't really know who your whole self is and all the different aspects of yourself. And frankly, I think it's a lifelong endeavor for us to really truly try to uncover that, because we all have our past histories, in some cases past traumas. We all have different dynamics we're dealing with in the workplace, different types of relationships, and all of that just muddies the water and makes it complicated. So it's not just a foregone conclusion that we can just decide one day I'm going to bring my whole self to work and that it can magically happen, because we don't always fully understand what that's all about. And it's true, like there are things that we can do at work as leaders to create a safe space, to create psychological safety, and to promote this idea of holistic wellness that includes, in my mind, things like bringing your whole self to work. We can promote that. We can try to enshrine that in policy and practice and procedure within the organization. That's great. But if people don't first understand who they are and what makes them tick and why they do the things they do,
right,
and whatnot, it's not
what is our whole self in the first place, right? Who am I is the big question in the first place. So you asked a little bit about my background and you gave a little snapshot, but a little bit more context there is that when I was Probably in my mid-30s. I'm in my 50s now. So when I was in my mid-30s, I began a rigorous practice. This was in, the late 1990s, early 2000s, a very rigorous practice of meditation. And this was sort of way before it was, hip and cool today. So going out and doing like a 7-day meditation retreat was largely unheard of in the workspace. And that work continued for me up until, well, it still continues today. But the depth of that work, where I took it, is I spent 3 months in silence in the Himalayas, meditating, in silence from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day. I did over 2,500 hours of silent retreat. And much of that was just really coming into contact with who am I, this question of who am I. And why that is so critical and so important as I advanced throughout my career and eventually became a chief marketing officer in several startups and now teach at Stanford, a piece of that was that I was fairly out of control. I didn't really know who I was. I was operating as a young leader. In my early 30s, I was promoted very early to vice president. I was operating as a young leader, largely from a space of what I would call sort of a discombobulated state of self, right? And I had conjured up notions of what that meant from my mind. But it's very, very different to conjure up notions of that from a very grounded whole place, from internal, inside the self, inside of the body, and the sort of somatic and neurobiology system, which is what we're doing when we practice meditation, right? We're actually going into a different space other than the mind. And so that kind of work, that sort of knowing of oneself to be able to even step into the concept of whole self is very, very different. One thing I'll share with you is, I call it a soul retrieval moment that I had when I was 39. And I was, as you said, I was working in an ad agency. My client was Lexus. For all, if you look from the outside in, I owned a home in Santa Monica, California, 6 blocks from the beach. I had a great relationship. I had a great job. I had clients that I loved and that loved me back. And I just had one of those moments where I was sitting at work one day and I paused, and I can remember where the sun was. I can remember where I was sitting, and this thought or feeling or sensation from my physical body, which was like, am I happy? Like, am I really happy? Do I even know what happiness is? And of course, at 39 years old, about to turn 40, right? This is a big moment. And in an instant, in 24 hours, I quit my job, sold my con I put my condo up on the market that week. I sold 50% of my things and I took off. And that's when I went and traveled and sat in India and did a lot of depth work. And for me, what came back out of that was a different way to hold the question of who am I? And I think that's a big piece of what we're talking about here today is how much do we really know ourselves when we come across in these moments where we're asked, whatever they are. Some people it happens when they're skiing, some people it happens when they're taking care of their child, or when they're in a meeting and they suddenly have the, these moments, they spark up. And usually we just roll right over them, right? We're like, oh. But I just stopped and said, what is it that will make me happy? And sort of went on this adventure to figure out who my whole self really was.
That's really cool. And you frame it as an adventure. I think many people would find it as terrifying and very scary. Maybe it was a little bit of that for you as well. Maybe that's the adventure piece. I don't know. But, and we all, I don't know, we talk about midlife crises, for example. And we say midlife, but it can happen at any time. And a lot of times it happens when people have been going down a path. They find themselves even perhaps they feel a little bit stuck doing something that maybe they used to love it and they just don't anymore for whatever reason, right? And I'm not going to frame it that way for you, but as you were talking about it, I'm like, oh, I've had some similar experiences. And for me at least, I would say some of that is at least kind of going through this existential midlife kind of situation. Like, am I where I want to be? Do I really understand what I want? Why am I doing what I've been doing? Is it because I really wanted to, because I really liked it? Is it because it's what other people expected of me and what I thought was successful, whatever. Like, was it external stuff being imposed on me that I just accepted, or was it really what I wanted? And I think that's a hard question. And you know, life is messy and it's probably a combination of both, right? But overall, you ultimately gave yourself space to lean into the discomfort and to run with it and to not just push past that feeling that we all tend to have at one point or another. And for you, that was, you know, quit your job, sell your stuff, sell your condo, move into a different direction and spend some time to get to know yourself better. What would you suggest? I mean, not everyone's in a position where maybe they feel like they can do that. What would you suggest are some practical things that anyone could do to start to really lean into knowing themselves better, doing that self-reflective work, really making sure that they are where they want to be? And for some people, that is a complete career transition and shift. For other people, maybe it's just trying to rekindle their love for their profession or for their relationships or whatever. It can play out in a lot of different ways for different people, but it has to start with this willingness to lean into that discomfort and the willingness to lean into some sort of self-reflective practice so you can really better understand where you're coming from, right?
I think, well, you said something that just is the first thing I want to address, which is, yes, midlife crisis. I believe that what used to be a midlife crisis is now happening for people at a very young age. There's Generation Z, the younger millennials are asking these hard questions and have come, maybe it was pandemic related, maybe it's social media related, maybe it's just the way we advanced a society. But I can tell you that I've guested on many podcasts, and some of them I'm guesting with quite, you know, young hosts, where these hosts are asking me these questions that are, you know, questions I didn't ask myself until I was, you know, almost 40. And these are 25-year-olds, 27-year-olds. So I think this concept, first of all, that what used to be midlife crisis has now expanded to become crisis. And that crisis is really, what are we doing here? What's it all about? And that question is being asked not just by people who are turning 40, who kind of sort of found themselves in a position, but by younger and younger people who are wondering, why did we construct this whole thing the way we constructed it, right? And it started with millennials sort of breaking everything and saying, let's reconstruct it. But now this next generation, I think, is saying, wait a minute, what is the point of all of this? You know, my best friend's son, he's 23 years old, and he came into the house, you know, he has a full-time job, and he came into the house and he said to her, so is this all there is? Like, do I just go to work and then I come home and then I like eat dinner and I go to sleep? And she looked at him and said, well, yeah, kind of is, right? But to look at 23-year-old heart and soul being in the space, in the face, and say, yeah, this is pretty much what it's about. Like, there's a moment, right, where we're realizing we're not just in midlife crisis, we're in crisis. And out of that crisis, I think people are doing, to get to your second point, like, what can I do? Sure. You can absolutely take some time, if you can afford it, and go travel. But that's certainly not what you need to do. I think the first step, and this is no new news, right? This concept of practicing mindfulness and meditation. But I'm going to share what is new news from my perspective. Many people come to the practice of mindfulness and meditation to quell anxiety, right? Or to calm themselves down so that they can feel more centered. That's sort of what I would call, you know, opening the jar. You're just taking the top off. But there's a whole jar of experience that happens as we deepen that practice. Why is that important for us as business people? Twofold. Number one, we're answering that question more and more of who am I and what makes me happy. So here's what I found out. So I went to India, I went to Africa, I sat in Himalayas, I did all these, I mean, deep, meaningful work, right? That, to your point, not everyone can do. And I came back and I had, you know, I think I had like at the time $6,000 in my pocket. I was sleeping on a friend's couch. This is after, you know, owning a home,
right?
Sleeping on a friend's couch, trying to figure out what was I going to do with my life. Well, it turns out I went right back into marketing, right? I started doing something slightly different with a little more consciousness around it, and I'm doing solar energy versus like selling a luxury vehicle. But I was still doing marketing. The difference was inside me. the difference didn't come from some external way that the world had to reconstruct itself for me. The difference was me in and of myself. And the depth work that I did was around just basically digging and digging and digging this question of who am I and what makes me happy. This is the soul retrieval. You could do it at any point in time in your life without changing anything around you, right? Sometimes people will come across, some big insight that says, okay, I need to pivot and do something radically different to be happy. But oftentimes, even when they pivot, this moment will emerge, right? Of even through that pivot, okay, now I'm doing the thing that I thought was going to make me happy, and I'm still not happy. And this is when I'm hopeful that anyone who hears this podcast anyway, or hears me speak, or who coaches with me will have that moment where they realize this is an internal game, guys, right? And when you pull up the top of the jar of meditation, you're basically just letting the air out of the tire. There's a whole world to participate in that not only gets you closer to who you are, but makes you a better leader, which is even more important, right?
I really like all of that. And again, like you said, it's kind of the first step. We need to make sure that we're doing that work, and it can be hard work, and it's not something that just happens overnight.
Correct.
I like how you identified, that when we say midlife crisis, that's a generic phrase that we use, but it can happen to anyone at any time. And I applaud young people who are really thinking deeply about their priorities and their values and what matters to them. I think you're right that in many cases, for many people, the pandemic was a catalyst to kind of reevaluate what maybe they took for granted, what they just assumed was the way it had to be, and started to push back against the status quo. And I think younger people certainly have been doing that. So whether you're young or you're middle-aged or you're old or whatever, I think we all have an opportunity to reinvent ourselves. And to recalibrate our values and priorities around, how they connect with what we're actually doing in our lives. And I think that's really healthy work. And so doing that work and being committed to the self-reflective practices, the meditation, the mindfulness, all of that I think is super important. Now, if we go to that next step and we start to, like, if I'm thinking about as a leader within my organization, hopefully, first and foremost, I'm modeling this for my people so that they recognize, like, it's a really good thing for you to go through this process, and that I'm going to be there and I'm going to be supportive of you and I'm going to be encouraging of you to do that. And I'm going to model for you how I do it. And hopefully, that gives others permission to do it as well. But also as a leader, hopefully I'm creating, systems and processes and that give permission and flexibility that allow people to do this type of work. So when I think about soul retrieval at work, I think about how do I help my people to be more satisfied, more engaged, more passionate, and finding meaning and purpose in the work that they do? And how do I create an environment where that can happen and be optimized, right? Any thoughts on how leaders can create that kind of an environment proactively?
Yeah, I mean, I'll also flip it to you, since you use the I word, right? When I think about, so our, it sounds like you've got some familiarity with this type of practice. So what have you noticed for yourself when you're in mindful behavior? Like, what happens in your system if you're standing up in front of your team, for example, or you're facilitating a conversation? What's happening for you?
I think one thing that's not happening is that I don't, if I'm in a more mindful place, I'm being present with the people I'm around, and I'm not allowing the busyness, the hecticness of the work get ahead of me. I'm not allowing myself to be sucked into like just putting out fires mode all the time, which is what a lot of leaders end up spending a lot of their time doing. That I'm gonna give myself the opportunity and the time to be with and sit with my people and to have important, meaningful conversations with them. Those are some of the types of things that I'm thinking about and trying to do, I guess, at least when I'm trying to create that kind of an environment.
And you said the P word, which is great, presence, right? Really being present to the scenario, to your scenario, allowing people space, to breathe, allowing people not thinking forward into like, where do I have to go? Where's the I in this game? Right? What am I trying to get out of this? But really opening it up so that other people can really come forward. I think that also what you described is space, right? That you create space in the room, you're creating space within yourself, which is most important. And I don't know, I always like the story of two leaders, right? You have two leaders, let's say two CEOs. And both CEOs, if you were to sit in a room with them, they don't enter the conversation a lot. They leave a lot of space for other people, right? Both CEOs are asking curious questions. Both CEOs have a grounded sense about them. One CEO is, if you were to, you know, be able to x-ray the CEO's brain, it's just pinging around, right? What's the next thing? What's my to-do list? Where am I going? And even though the composure can look as if it's there, the inside is like a treacherous storm, right? The other CEO, if you were to x-ray their brain, is actually like one flat line of reception. And that reception is coming in two ways. It's coming in from the outside, from the team, for example, but it's also coming in from that person's body, an ability to receive what that person is feeling from themselves. This is kind of the first step of what I would call soul retrieval, right? It's this ability to be able to have this inner radio, right, that you're tuning into that is both receiving the outside world, but it's also receiving the self at the same time. And you notice with these kinds of CEOs, right, again, these two leaders look the same, but there's a difference oftentimes in how that meeting and what acceleration, what innovation, what can come out of space and time when a leader is sitting in that space. And it's not easy, right? It's to your point earlier, like, this is not an easy step. It looks easy, sounds easy. I would just sit in meditation, be mindful, whatever that means, right? But getting your brain to the point where you can have more of that steady line and where you can have the receiver coming in and the receiver coming up from the body is really powerful. That's the work that I'm doing at Stanford, right? The whole course on just putting MBA students who have been largely acceleratory, they're type A, they've been rewarded for the pain that happens in their brain. And now we sit them down and say, okay, we're going to talk about feeling. If you can imagine, right? And most of the time they're searching for feeling from their brain, which is not where feelings come from, right? So this moment when we're putting people back in touch with that inner radio, right? That's the big piece here. And I think once we do that, sometimes the happiness level, oftentimes, I would say I've not seen it happen otherwise. Oftentimes the happiness piece comes with that. Like, you can stick me now in any situation. You and I didn't talk before this. We had 3 minutes of saying hello to each other. You can pop me in any situation and I will be happy. So long as I have time to do my practice, right, is to be able to receive you, John, and to be able to sense of like, what is coming up for me? What do I really, really feel and want to say to you right now?
Carrie, I note the time. I need to let you go here in just a minute. Unfortunately, this has been just a fun conversation. Like you said, this wasn't scripted. We really just had a general premise that we were starting from. And I think it's been a really nice organic dialogue. And I hope that we've given people at least a few nuggets, a few ideas of where you can take your own work around soul retrieval personally, but also how you can create space and create an environment at work with your team where you can encourage them and promote this with them as well, so that we can all just be a little bit more in tune, so we can all tap into our values and our priorities and better understand ourselves and how that relates back to the work that they do, that we do, that they do, so that we can all find more meaning and purpose, more passion, that we can all do better stuff and just create more value for those around us. And ultimately, that's what I think comes from all of this.
And I'll add, because when we do that, we change the world.
Yeah.
Right. If we're just pinging around in the constancy of our brain, it's really difficult for for us to get down into true shift and true change, right? So I really appreciate you allowing space and time to have this kind of conversation. It's a little esoteric, right? And, you know, practicing meditation, practicing mindfulness, getting a great leadership coach who understands how to take a real-time situation, right? Like I'm sitting with my investors and XYZ happens, what do I do, right? And then instead of answering from the brain, we actually put this sort of these receptors online, right? And by virtue of doing that, you bring your whole self to work.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Carrie, as we wrap up, I just want to give you a moment to share with the audience how they can connect with you, find out more about your work, your team, and then give us any final word that you might have on the topic for today.
Yeah, so I'm an executive coach, as you said. I facilitate executive meetings. I coach one-on-one. I coach teams. You can find me at super easy, www.carriejacobs.com. I also offer a free 1 hour complimentary introductory session where we can get to know each other and see if there's help to be given. And I would close by saying I do this work because I was pretty unhappy for a long time as a leader. I was pretty stressed out. I didn't really understand why I was doing what I was doing. And I myself now flip that and help other people become happy and become and feel fulfilled, not only in themselves, families, but in what they're really, in the impact they're really having on the larger script of the planet. So thank you for having me, John.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I encourage the audience to reach out, get connected, find out more about what Carrie can do for you. And as always, I hope everyone can stay healthy and safe, that you can find meaning and purpose at work each and every day. And I hope you all have a great week. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the podcast. We hope you stay healthy and safe, and please join us again soon.